Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, one of the newest inductees into the Women in Poker Hall of Fame. That's Christy Gazes, who we last talked to a couple years ago at the World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas. We're looking forward to having her back on the show today. Also, we'll have our poker coach, Nick DiVella, talking about blocking bets, which I think is a concept we've never really talked about in the 2.5 years we've been doing the show.
It is something we've never touched upon. It's something that is quite interesting. I think it'll be interesting to everybody to listen to.
Yeah. By the way, that voice is actually sitting here next to me. I'm Paul Harrah's. He's Dennis Phillips, and we are both in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $58,000. The tournament players and the cash game players are already around the tables, and we're looking forward to the PLO that'll start up right at this table as soon as we're done here today at 4 o'clock in St. Louis. Now, before we get to anything else, Dennis, we've got to talk about an issue related to you. Last week, after we got off the air, a story broke online that your relationship with PokerStars was over, that you were no longer a PokerStars team pro, that they had terminated your deal. We haven't had a chance to talk about it since then, so what's the explanation here? What's the truth?
Well, just a brief statement about it. My relationship with PokerStars has not been severed. Okay, there's a continuing changing atmosphere in the U.S. There's a limit as to what can and can't be done by PokerStars in here. Everything is changing. A lot of roles have not been defined. My role has been changing and will probably continue to change. But I'm telling you right now that Stars is sending me over there to Europe, to the EPT London. Stars is paying my way into it over there. Stars is buying me into the PCA. I am still wearing the Stars patches. I don't know how everybody thinks that this relationship has been severed, but Stars likes me. I like Stars. We'll see what the future becomes. The U.S. situation, obviously, has changed a lot since April 15th. We're very hopeful that things are going to change for the better. Again, I can't really talk about that. But if you want to come to London and see me, I'll be wearing my Stars patches, and I'll be playing in the EPT, and I'm going to be having some fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that
Pretty simple.
I think that should answer some of the questions from some of the people online. And I know that you've been getting calls from reporters, and they want to have statements about it. And essentially,
there you go.
Essentially, there it was. The man has his own radio show. And that should explain it. And explain why you're back home here in St. Louis for a few days. You came in for a couple of things this weekend.
Yeah, right? I did. Well, I had some businesses. Still got a lot of business ties around here. Still got a lot of friends around here. I like to come back to Harrah's to play in the room here. But came back for yesterday. We had a golf outing and a charity auction. And I'm a little bit hoarse today, and there's a reason for that, for the Kelo Foundation.
What is that?
It's a diabetes research foundation founded by Dr. Kelo 30 years ago, and this is one of the... Dr. Kelo never met a man he didn't like, never met a person he didn't want to help. That's it, very simply. He's donated his life to helping other people. He's a fantastic guy. I think he's 84 years old right now, still active, still working with us, and we were able to raise a ton of money there. Everybody from Mike Shanahan to Jack Garland to Larry Holt to Bill Courtney to all these guys showed up there last night. They brought their checks with them. They worked with it. We had a golf outing. A gentleman that I was playing golf with, I haven't told you this.
No.
On the number 7 hole at Greenbrier, put it in the hole.
Nice.
$25,000 worth of nice. Yeah. Hole in one for Jerry Adzema, a guy that has been a friend of mine since college. We golfed together. He popped it in there. I'm watching it. It's 160 yards away, and it rolls into the shade a little bit. And I went, did that really do that? And David Tucker, the gentleman who does the horn, was right beside me and says, that went in the hole. And we're looking at each other. Are you sure? That went in the hole. You know, we're over there getting the official and everything. That went in the hole.
Now, you know, in Japan, when you hit a hole in one, you have to buy a round of something for everybody in your foursome.
Jerry was very, very happy that it happened at the charity auction where all drinks were free. But anyhow, we had a great time. We had some fantastic packages down there that were donated. Awesome deal. It's the Kelo Foundation. If you look up or Google Dr. Kelo, you can find it there. They do a tremendous amount of work. And we had donations from the Blues and from the Rams and from a number of other people. Bill Courtney, who gentleman owns Helitech, heck of a good sponsor for it and really, really helped us out there. Mike Shanahan was there and did the very same thing, the former owner of the Blues. And it was just awesome. We had a great time. And they had – the reason why I'm a little hoarse?
Yeah.
I was the auctioneer.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Now, that was fun.
Well, if I know you, you got people to bid higher and higher and higher and got a few extra dollars for the Kelo Foundation.
It went very well, I have to admit. And, yes, I did a little prodding and a little bit of persuading and a little bit of whatever it took. I kept saying, if you don't bid, I'm going to sing. You know, and that pretty much got them bidding.
Wow.
So, anyhow.
People with no credit line were offering up money to keep you from singing.
Yeah, but it's just another one. There's so many good, worthwhile charities here. This is one of them that I raked up near the top, and we were able to raise a lot of money for the foundation, and they do a tremendous amount of help for people.
Good,
so,
good.
All is good.
And while you were here this weekend, did you play any poker here at Harris?
Well, they have a PLO game here.
Oh, you heard about it,
How can you not come to St. Louis and not play PLO at Harris? You've told me about this game and everything like that. So,
yeah.
Good grief, you've got to come here. I wonder how many days in a row they've had a PLO game here. It's every night now.
Yeah, it's been going on 7 days a week for several months now.
It's just unbelievable.
And on the weekend, more than one table.
No, I think they had three tables there on Saturday night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, anyhow.
It's a great game.
Huh?
I wasn't here this weekend because, you know, a married man who's also a father only has so much poker equity at home. And I had gone to Kansas City last week to help out a friend of mine, the writer for the Kansas City Star, who had an event there. And while I was there, I went to Harrah's Kansas City, and I played in their Wednesday night 5-10 game,
awesome.
Which was a terrific game, and I had a big night there. And several of the people there had heard about the big game that we're bringing to Harrah's St. Louis at the
there
end of October.
Yep.
And I was gathering names and handing out information. And some people were saying, I have a friend. Give me his email address. I was sending them the information. And we talked about it on the show here last week. And we even got a couple of emails from people who are not from Missouri who are interested in coming to the game. For those of you who don't know about it, it is going to be the biggest cash game in St. Louis casino history.
In Missouri history.
Yep, that's right. It'll be at the end of October, the last weekend of October, the 28th, 29th, and 30th. $15,000 minimum buy-in. The blinds will be $25.50 with a $10 ante. It'll be no limit hold'em. We're going to definitely have one table. Very probably we're going to have two tables. Very likely we're going to have a list on top of that. And people are coming from Chicago and Tunica and Louisville and Cincinnati and Kansas City and Wichita and all over the place to come play in this game. And if you're interested in getting the full details on this, you can email DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. That's the email address for the show that Dennis and I both check. DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. I'll send you the details. We're going to arrange hotel discounts. We'll tell you how to wire the money here if you want, don't want to carry it with you or whatever you want to do.
And there's also what we're calling some feeder tables, $10, $20 setups down there that you can play at for a while. And if you're successful for that, then to move up to the bigger game.
Right, and those won't be must-move in
no,
the bigger
no.
game. You could just come and play 10, 20 if you wanted to.
There's going to be 23 tables here, and there will probably be 23 tables filled. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, that's the last weekend of October. We'll tell you more about that. But some people in Kansas City that I played with that night,
cool.
Some of them had heard about it, some of them had not heard about it. A lot of buzz in that room, and a lot of them are looking forward to coming here. Okay, let's get to some stuff that's in poker news. First of all, today is a day that the Poker Players Alliance, so we haven't talked about for a while,
right.
The PPA was pushing for people to contact Congress today. The online poker push is still on. I have my doubts about whether this can get done as we enter a presidential election year next year, but you know more about this than I do, and I know that the Deficit Reduction Super Committee that was formed by Congress and President Obama They had their first hearing today, and I don't know if the word poker was spoken there, but it certainly should have been. I know that the 2 plus 2 forums have been really pushing this. Rich Muni, who is the engineer on 2 plus 2, who's a PPA board member, he has been trying to get people spurred on to action. So you're on the inside of this. What do you know?
Well, I know that there's movement in state after state after state. You've got New Hampshire, you've got Massachusetts, you've got Ohio. You have a number of them that are all moving forward on different gaming issues. They all see this revenue. They all realize that it's been very profitable and can be regulated and can be controlled, and therefore are trying to get a piece of the pie. Don't know for sure what's going on. There's even a representative in Massachusetts who introduced online gaming to make it regulated within the state of Massachusetts and to enable other people from other states to be opt into it. It's just happening all over the place. It's now been introduced in Nevada. It was introduced in California. It's been introduced in a number of other states, the latest one being Massachusetts. Something's going to happen here. People are realizing that in this kind of a recession, I'm going to use that word, I know you're not supposed to politically, but in this kind of a recession, that you are going to have to actually find ways to generate more revenue, to find ways to create more jobs. Guess what? This does it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact number. I've heard estimates of 50,000 new jobs if they would do this. I've heard estimates of millions and millions per state that gets into this. Tens of millions on the government level. Why are they not looking at this?
Well,
this...
what's happening at the federal level? We know about Joe Barton's bill, H.R. 2366.
Mm-hmm.
Has that moved forward? Has he gotten more co-signers? What's the status of that?
Again, nobody knows for sure how much support he has for this bill. They are trying to push it forward. They're trying to get the PPAs pushing for people to send in the letters and to try and show the support. Harry Reid appears to be on it and pushing for it, some sort of legislation. A number of states are now passing legislation, such as Nevada, that's stating that when it becomes legal on a federal level, on a nationwide level, then our regulations and everything will kick in, and they want to have everything in place because they're assuming that it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody you talk to right now assumes it will happen. They just don't know the time frame. Whether it happens in the next 6 months or the next year, I don't know. There's definitely going to be movement of it. It's definitely going to be coming forward, and it's definitely going to become legal and regulated and controlled and taxed at some time in the future.
So things are moving. We just don't know how quickly or how far they're moving at this point, and the legislation is still kind of just hanging there. But people are talking about it, and it is
correct.
An issue, and be nice if this deficit reduction super committee would think, reducing the deficit by bringing in these revenues that nobody could call taxes except the companies who would be taxed might be a good thing when you're talking about tens of billions of dollars.
It's amazing, and they're still throwing out some of the old stupid arguments that just don't hold water anymore about how do you make the social conscious type of amendments to it, to keep underage people from playing on it, to regulate the amount that people do so they don't run themselves, you know, and mortgage their house to do this. And those things are available. Those things were introduced and added to the previous bills that we've had in there. Nobody has objections to those. Everybody wants to see those. Nobody wants, you know, kids doing anything that's not in their best interest.
Yep.
And they're able to do it in other aspects. Why can't they do it in poker? I don't understand.
All right, we'll keep you posted on that, but if you want to find out more about what you can do and how you can contact Congress and try to push some of these legislators forward in this because you miss playing online poker, go to the PPA website, theppa.org, and they've got information there. Also, if you follow Dennis on Twitter as Dennis_Phillips, he just tweeted a link to a way that you can find out more information about it and send direct messages to Congress as well. Dennis_Phillips on Twitter. And just for the record, I'm Paul Harris Show on Twitter. While we're talking about online poker, I hate to bring up Full Tilt again.
Yep.
Week after week after week, we seem to be doing this. But we keep getting questions from people. When am I going to get my money back? And another week has gone by, and we don't have any information for you. But we can tell you that in Canada, there's another class action suit against Full Tilt Poker, filed by something called the Consumer Law Group. A lawyer by the name of Jeff Orenstein has filed this last Thursday in Quebec, quote, on behalf of individuals who have funds being held in their Full Tilt Poker player accounts, unquote. According to the Montreal Gazette, Orenstein says Canadian patrons could have lost anywhere from $5 to $10 million when Full Tilt shut down its online site to all players on June 29th. The lead plaintiff. Now this is the part that's going to make you laugh.
I know.
The lead plaintiff for this is a guy named Mitchell Schnurbach. It's not the name that you're going to laugh at. It's the amount I'm going to tell you in a second. How much did he have in his Full Tilt account? Between 1 and 5. What, 1 in 5,000? 1 in 5 million? No, between $1 and $5. I don't think that even gets you in a small claims court.
No, it doesn't. But the thing of it is, it makes no difference what the amount is. It is the principle of it.
I think I may still have $1.10 on Full Tilt from about 7 years ago. I'm not kidding. Okay. I can be part of a class action suit for $1.10. It's not even worth sending me the notice, the legal notice.
That's sort of like when you get the nickel refund from a company in an envelope that cost them 44 cents to mail. Yeah, there you go.
So Orenstein, the lawyer, says he does have other Full Tilt players who've contacted him about the suit. One of them has $250,000 in his account. Another has $10,000 in there. The suit has not been approved by the judge in the Superior Court in Quebec yet. If it does, Orenstein says he's going to go after Full Tilt's U.S. and Canadian assets. The important thing to remember here is that Black Friday knocked online poker out in the U.S. for PokerStars and Full Tilt and Absolute Poker and UB, and now other sites have dropped it as well, even the ones that were not involved in the indictment from the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Department of Justice. But there has been this impact on worldwide poker because Full Tilt is still not operating in any country. So Canadian players, European players, African players, Asian players, they're affected by this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're joking about it because your lead plaintiff really had between $1 and $5 on. Is that Canadian or U.S.?
There you go. That makes about a nickel's difference.
Because I think Canadian would be more money.
Just a hair more, I think. I think it's like 103 or something trade or something like that. Yeah.
So. Whatever it is, I'm laughing at it, but it's serious because there are quite a few people who are affected by it in the long run, and you know we can't tell you when the money's going to come back. Now, continuing along here with poker news. Tonight is a new episode of Survivor, the Jeff Probst reality show.
Yep.
They're in the South Pacific this time. Why does that have to do with poker? Because one of the contestants is a poker player. Now, we went through this several years ago when Jean-Robert Ballande was on there, and I don't think he lasted more than a month or so, four or five episodes. We should get Bobby on the show sometime.
Actually, I've met him, I've talked with him, I've played with him. He is an interesting character.
Yeah.
He's actually a good guy. He's fun to be around.
I played 10-20 with him at the Bellagio a few years ago, shortly after the Survivor thing, and the only thing anybody ever wanted to talk to him about was that reality show. I like the fact that he puts a lot of action out there on the table. And, you know, he's got this deal with Aria now. You're going to see him featured tonight. Tuesday night on the World Series of Poker telecast from the main event on ESPN. There's going to be a little profile of him, and he'll be at one of the featured tables. And so, he's getting his name out there again.
Well, why don't I reach out and see if we can get him on the show in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, that'd be great if we could talk to him.
Cool.
I think he's traveling in Europe now for some of the things that are going on there.
There's tons of things going on in Europe.
I'd love to have him on the show.
All right.
So anyway, he was the last guy to be on Survivor. Now there's a poker player by the name of Jim Rice. Who? Jim Rice, his actual profession is he runs a medical marijuana dispensary in Colorado.
Oh, so it's not the center fielder?
No, it's not the...
not center fielder. He was a right fielder, I believe.
Right. Boston Red Sox?
With the Red Sox.
Yeah, no, it's not that Jim Rice. Yeah. No.
Freddie Lynn was the center fielder. My fault.
This Jim Rice owns the marijuana dispensary in Colorado, and on Survivor, refers to himself as a WPT champion. Okay, I looked him up. He didn't win any WPT championship. He didn't win any WPT main event. He did win one of the other tournaments in the WPT series. You know, when the WSOP circuit goes around, there's a lot of events leading up to the main event. WPT has the same thing. This was at Bellagio at the Festa al Lago. 5 years ago, the $2,000 buy-in event, and he did take that down. I don't think that makes you a WPT champion. He also said that he has something like 40 tournament caches. looked them up on the Hendon Mob database.
Yep.
I found five or six. Now, you know, maybe he's in some basement tournaments with some guys at home or at the Knights of Columbus Hall or the American Legion Hall, and they don't get into the Hendon Mob database.
Do charity events count?
Charity events, like, I don't see those on Hendon, but he did make the final table of a Heartland Poker Tour event earlier this year.
Okay.
You know, he's a guy.
Yeah.
He's a guy who plays poker. He's not a professional poker player by any means, but he'll be on there, and he's friends with Paul Wasika, and, you know, we'll see how long he lasts. You know,
what the heck?
Poker players do have some relationship to the world of reality TV. Maria and Tiffany were on The Amazing Race.
There you go.
Jean-Robert Ballon was on Survivor. And, of course, Annie Duke was on The Apprentice. And by the way, speaking of Annie, our best wishes to her. She was in a car accident yesterday.
Oh, no, I didn't hear about that.
Her Prius versus some guy's Escalade.
Ooh, not a good combination.
Not a good combination. Annie tweeted that she's bruised but okay. Car crumpled. But Annie...
Okay, you can replace a car.
Right.
No problem with that. Oh, and I had not heard about that. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely right. So our best wishes to Annie, who, of course, is the commissioner of the Epic Poker League. And while I'm on that thought, last week when we were starting the show, they were starting the main event, their second main event for Epic. And about an hour or two into that main event, I looked up to see how many players they had. And at that time, it was 48. But I said, look, registration's open until 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We'll see. They ended up with a total of 97.
Yeah.
They had 190 the first time.
No,
137.
Right.
The first time around. 97 this time around.
Right.
Granted, a lot of people are in Europe, but how many will they get the third time around? I think we're going to get into some bankroll issues eventually when you talk about who can play in these events going forward at $20K apiece.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know there's a huge overlay. I know they really take care of the players there. I know people like the structure and the setup and Matt Savage that's putting it together. I mean, there's a lot of positive things there for it.
Yeah.
But it still comes down to it's $20,000 against the best players in the world. How much positive EV is really there?
Yep. I'm glad you mentioned Matt Savage.
Oh, no.
Because he has the poker tweet of the day. It's a kind of little subtle thing. But it goes back to a story we told on this show 3 or 4 weeks ago because of a video that showed up on YouTube from the EPT event in Madrid involving a guy named Ivan Freites.
Yeah.
You may remember that this guy pulled off a horrible angle shoot in a tournament where he said, raise, no, I call, no speak English. And the tournament director, Tom...
It starts with a K. Kirshner?
Kramer?
No. Kirshner.
I can't remember his name.
Okay.
Anyway, Tom, the tournament director, comes over because there's some confusion at the table, and he says to the other guy who's involved in the hand who hasn't acted yet, this is going to count as a raise, but it's going to be a minimum raise. So you bet 275, he's going to have to make it 550 for the min raise here. But before you act, I'm going to tell you that this gentleman has pulled this stunt before, twice in this tournament, and both times he had the nuts.
Yeah.
Now go ahead and make your decision. And you and I had a long debate about whether that was the right thing for Tom to do. Anyway, with that history, Matt Savage tweeted today, he's at the Partouche Poker Tour now,
cool,
which is in Cannes, France. Mm-hmm. He's the tournament director of that. He said, EPT Madrid winner Ivan Freites is here. I informed him, yo hablo español, and he gave me a strange look. Now, Matt is essentially saying, look, buddy, I know about you, and you're not going to be able to pull that off with me. You're going to have exactly zero chance to pull that garbage on my watch here.
Cool.
All right. We've got Christy Gazes, the new member of the Woman in Poker Hall of Fame, coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, it's time for our poker coaching segment, brought to you by StackemCoaching.com. That's the site where the pros sit down with the players and talk them through various scenarios and help them with their games. And you can listen in on those coaching sessions, watch and listen in to those on StackemCoaching.com. In a moment, I'll give you a promo code you can use for a free trial of that. But here, as our poker coach today, is Nick DeVella. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. Mm-hmm. What's your topic going to be today?
Today, I'd like to talk about block betting. A block bet is made when you're out of position and you make a small bet in order to prevent a larger bet from being made by your opponent. So, for example, let's say there's $300 in the pot, and you think your opponent will bet a large amount of $200 or more. You instead throw out a blocker bet of around $100 or one-third pot. Hopefully, this will slow your opponent down and allow you to profitably see the next card. This tool works great when you have, let's say, a flush draw on the turn, in which will enable you to lead into your opponent, getting control of the hand back, and let you set your own price to see a cheap river. This type of bet will help disguise your hand and let you set up a nice river value bet once you actually hit your hand. It essentially acts as a semi-bluff, which will let you to continue with your story and let you bluff the river if you so choose to do so. I got to warn you, though, I see a lot of players make this mistake of betting too small. So let's say we're back at that $300 example where I suggested to bet 100. A lot of these players are betting 50 to 70, which may come off as weak and let your opponent raise you, taking you off your hand anyways. So make sure not to do that. Again, this bet is always made out of position, usually with a drawing-type hand, in which you set your own price to make it a profitable play, while at the same time taking control of the hand and leaving you with another way to win the pot by bluffing the river. Finally, there's another example of what a block bet does, is a value bet. Let's say we have ace-10 on an ace-high board, and we hit our two-pair on the river, but it also completes a three-card flush. We throw out a value-slash-blocker bet, hopefully getting a worse ace to call us, and then if we get raised, we can safely assume that our hand is beat and we can lay it down comfortably.
Yeah. I like having it to gain the knowledge. Very, very good there on the end of it. Wonder, though, if you've got to be a little bit careful getting into betting patterns there, that if you're a standard raiser raising two-thirds of the pot and you only bet one-third of the pot, are you giving away a tell there?
You could be if you do it more times than once to one specific opponent. So you always have to, you know, mix in your leads with actually good hands, leading with sets, leading with top two, those kind of things. And, you know, always try to keep guessing.
What's the converse of this, Nick? How do you defend against the blocking bet if you're the person who is in position and somebody bets $100 into a $300 pot and you've got a pretty good hand there, or and you think that person is doing exactly the strategy you're talking about? What's the defense?
Well, I guess it depends on who the opponent is. I think it's very player-dependent. You know, if you see a young punk like myself doing that, you know, it may be difficult to... It's very tough to play against because it's very confusing when you make that bet to your opponents. So, you know, I guess it has a lot to do with the strength of your hand, the size of the pot, stack sizes, so on and so forth.
That's a good point because it is a confusing one. It's like the another pressure point you can put, like they do the three betting now so often with things. And then if you've got that mediocre hand, that ace 10, ace jack, do you call a three bet? And, you know, yeah, I like that. I like the blocking idea.
Great stuff, Nick. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, guys.
As Nick Davella, just one of the many coaches you'll find online at stack'emcoaching.com. You want a free trial of the site? Go there right now and use the promo code FINALTABLE. And you can check out Stack'em Coaching for free as our guest. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis and Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 1-800-GRANNY-8. We'll take a break, and Dennis and I will be right back to talk with the newest inductee into the Women in Poker Hall of Fame, Christy Gazes, here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com and via iTunes.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show from Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harris alongside Dennis Phillips, and this is the place where we play poker and the place we invite you to come and play as well. Whether you're a cash game player who plays Pot Limit Omaha or No Limit Hold'em or Limit Hold'em, there are games going on here all the time and tournaments going on. 10 $60 tournaments a week, plus $125 buy-in on Friday nights and another one on Saturday, and the $160 buy-in on Thursday nights. And a reminder that on the final Saturday of this month, in just 11 days from now, on September 24th, they will have once again the $200 buy-in double shootout where first place is guaranteed $10,000. You can buy in for that anytime over the course of the month by going to the cage in the poker room here at Harrah's St. Louis. It's, again, a $200 buy-in. There'll be 100 people total who will play in it. All you got to do is beat your table. Then you make the final table. You win the final table. You get $10,000. And everybody at the final table gets something back as well. Outside the poker room, there are great restaurants like Charlie Gito's. And starting next month, the new Kelly English Steakhouse here at Harrah's St. Louis. And you can also come in on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in September and swipe your total rewards card for a chance to play the Hit It Big Machine and win up to $500,000 every time you play. For more information, go to harrahsstlewis.com. That's Harrah's St. Louis, the website of Harrah's St. Louis, the home of the Final Table Poker Radio Show.
Today we are joined by one of the newest inductees in the Women in Poker Hall of Fame. They introduced three people about a week ago, and Christy Gazy is the guest today, and she was there. She has over $1 million in tournament caches. She's had 8 caches at the WSOP. She's had 10 WPT caches, and including this year, she ran really deep in the WSOP main event and in the 7-card high-low. We talked to her a couple of years ago while we were there at the Rio, and we are happy to have her back here on the final table. Hello, Christy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're great. Good to talk to you again. Congratulations on your induction.
Thank you, and thanks for having me back again. We can finish what we started.
Yeah.
There you go. Absolutely. I love that.
I like closure.
So how was the induction and everything? I wasn't able to make it that night. I was hoping to and then couldn't at the last minute.
Oh, my God. It was such good times. It's such a great Women in Poker Hall of Fame and Poker Gives. All those guys are so great. Jose Soto, Linda Johnson. I mean, they make such a fabulous event, and everyone had a great time. And I didn't fuck up my speech too much, so that's good. Or flub my speech. Excuse my French. I'm already cursing. I didn't flub my speech that much, but I did good. Pardon.
Tell us a little bit about the beginning of your poker career, because you have been in poker rooms for several years now, not so much because you've devoted a lot more of your life to being a professional options trader, and you've got your own firm, and we can talk about that in a moment here. But take us back to the beginning when, even though we don't have nearly enough women in poker now, when you started out, there were so few women in a completely male-dominated game. What was that like for you?
For me, it was just fun because I was kind of like a punk rock underage kid, and I just fit right in with all the different, you know, degens down at the Commerce. And we used to go and play Pi-Gal first, so I knew a lot of the dealers and stuff already, and then I would go and start to play the 7-card set, and it was just, you know, I played like late at night graveyard with my fake ID so I wouldn't get caught because I was underage. And so, I mean, for me, everyone was just like, what's this kid doing here? But, I mean, there's, you know, a bunch of old broads, a couple of cocktail waitresses, not a lot of young girls for sure. But I kind of just fit in because I was just a weirdo too, and that's weirdo central. That's what's great about playing in L.A. because you're exposed to everybody from all over the world, so it's a good training ground for sure.
So it wasn't too intimidating having all those guys sitting around the table?
No, because most of them didn't speak English, firstly. And secondly, I mean, it was just for me, I just loved playing so much at that time. I was such so into it and so full force, and I just, it was my life. I, you know, it was where I spent my nights, and I slept all day, total vampire action. And it was just, I loved it so much, I never really got into it. I always got along with everybody. I mean, never really had problems.
Well, now, surely there had to be times and situations where, you know, it was uncomfortable at the table, or somebody thought you shouldn't be sitting at the table and maybe send some derogatory remarks. I mean, I'm sure you went through some things that you probably would have rather not, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, but that's an everyday occurrence of the Commerce, and that's encouraged, actually, because they just let you get away with murder. You just, you know, and it's just part of the action. So you get into it every day with somebody, but I don't think it's really a female-male thing. I think it's just one degenerate crossing another. I mean, I've seen hands broken by players to deal, you know, break a dealer's hand. I've seen crazy things, of course. And, you know, you get into it sometimes. I really don't try to go there at this point when I play. I really just try to have fun. But if somebody's being super rude to the dealer or just totally out of line, I'll say something. But, you know, people are way more behaved, especially in tournaments these days, than they were then, for sure. I mean,
do you think women at the table have a better shot now than they did when you were starting out?
I think women have always had a good shot. It's just that it's just a total numbers thing. I mean, there's like what the main event had 97% men and 3% women. And that was the same 20 years ago, the same amount of entrants. So, like, as far as percentage, there's just not a lot of women. There wasn't a lot of women playing, but women always had a shot. I mean, they still do now. I mean, now you see, you know, you used to see one woman at every 10 tables or so. Now you see at least a woman at every table. So, yeah, definitely, it's stronger and less intimidating. I mean, you just have to view your opponents as mannequins, I think. You can't really make them men. They're just flesh over metal, and then it makes it easier to play against them.
Well, okay.
Flesh over metal? Are you playing the Terminator?
I mean, whatever works for you, you know? You're not grandma anymore. You're flesh over metal now, and take all your chips.
I raise with top set, and I'll be Pac.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, well, then how do we get more women involved? How do we get it to where there's two or three women at every table?
I mean, I think women just, I think online, unfortunately, online's gone for the time being in the States. Obviously, we all know that. I mean, that really helped as far as the intimidation factor is women not, you know, knowing what they're doing. They get a training online, so it's less intimidating because they know the game. But the women just have to get out there and just go and play and just get out to the casinos, go to your home game. Just, you know, view it as a game, view it as, you know, don't view it as, you know, women don't want to get, a lot of women are too nice or too mean or, you know, there's all kinds, obviously, but they get intimidated easily by men. And you have to just take it with a grain. And what I suggest if they're, like, sexually harassing you or something is just come over the top of them and embarrass them in front of the other guys, and then they'll view you as one of the guys. You know, don't let them stomp on you. Just come over the top of them. If they're obnoxious, then just say something to demean them at the table, and then they'll leave you alone. If they know you fight back, they try to pick on the weaker, you know, like, oh, the new chick, she doesn't know how to play. And also, women, I think, need to just play a bit more aggressive, you know, to try that out, because it's easier for us, our nature, to be more conservative with money and play tighter. But, like, to just take chances, you know, try it out in your smaller game, play your position stronger, or four bet them light, and just play more aggressive, because they'll give you way more credit, because they think that women rarely bluff. And that, you know, throw the bluff into the game a bit more, I think, is important for women, because they can get away with it more.
Do you think there needs to be some sort of like a woman making the final table having some of the reactions like a Phil Hellmuth or the effect that Chris Moneymaker had in 03 when it became every man's man and, you know, he was symbolized with it? If we get a charismatic woman at the final table of a main event, is that just going to start snowballing this? Maybe that's what we need, something to kick it off?
I mean, I think it could not hurt. It depends who it is and how dynamic they are. And
you'll volunteer?
I'm sorry?
You'll volunteer?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if they want to hire me for this job, you got it. I mean, I'll work for free just to get there, you know? Like, let's go. I mean, come on, you know? Although I was on ESPN this year, which I'd never been on before, and I looked so miserable, and I'm like, oh, I look like, oh, that's why I'm playing poker. I'm like, I'm miserable. I was like, oh, God, I got to smile. It's been a while. But, yeah, I mean, absolutely, it's important. I think charisma would be great, or just somebody who has a good A personality would help, but any woman at all really would help, certainly just for exposure, although there have been a lot of women in the last, you know, since the explosion, especially playing on television, so definitely women have seen women playing, so I don't think it's just a television thing, although it can't hurt. I mean, I think it's just a matter of women just still not knowing about it, thinking that poker is a man's game, or not knowing, oh, this is a game, like, what is this? And, you know, just sort of looking at it when they're doing it as watching football or whatever, oh, it's just a dude thing. When it's not, in fact, just women I know, like some of my good friends that I've known for years, they still don't gamble and they just don't have an interest in it. So it's like if they knew, they could become like fembot, you know, ninja poker chicks and just take all your money, they'd be out there in a second. So I think a lot of it's just not knowing.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. Our guest is Christy Gazes, one of the newest inductees into the Women in Poker Hall of Fame. We should mention the other two, Margie Heinz and Phyllis Caro, who we discussed at length last week on the show. The keynote speaker at the ceremony a couple of weeks ago was Annie Duke, who spoke about mentoring and trying to get the 3% number up to maybe 10% in the main event of the World Series of Poker. But I wonder where you fall on something that Annie has talked about in the past. She is against ladies' events where only women are allowed to, or only women are only supposed to be the ones who are in these events. What do you think about that as a woman who has played for years and years?
I could see both sides of the argument, although I think that it shouldn't be an argument at all. It's just plain silly. Like, you know, I can understand women's events because, you know, it's less intimidating for a woman to play with all women, you know, get their feet wet, sort of like a girl's vibe to it. And I could see the other side, like, oh, we should be able to play. They can't tell us, you know, if there's women only, there should be men only and transgender only and whatever, blah, 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 lawyers only and doctors only. I mean, it just gets to bordering on the ridiculous. So I definitely see both sides. However, as far as Annie being against, I don't think she was really against. I think she just wasn't, you know, I think she was more, not against, but just not really for. Do you know what I mean? Because it can't be bad. It's certainly, you know, more women, some women just like to play with women. So, I mean, it's not really a big issue. People make it bigger than it is. Like, for example, this year, the final table, my good friend Karina came in second, and there was a dude that made the final table. And it was just, people were so mean to the dude. But he's got to expect that entering a women's only tournament. You know, so I see both sides.
I believe we refer to him as the idiot.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I love dude. The announcer there that introduced all nine of them, went through the eight of them, got to him, and he's introducing, you know, a paramedic and a doctor and gets to this. I would call him a gentleman, but I don't think he was. Anyhow, gets to this person of interest here, and says, and he's unemployed and single. Big surprise.
Yeah, I said that. That was me. I did the intros.
Oh, you did it. Oh, I love it. Yeah, I did not know that. I love it.
Yeah, he asked me at the last minute. No one's like, do you want to introduce him? I'm like, sure, I'll introduce him. So it was so great to have be able to say this about this guy. But, I mean, you know, I mean, I understand. But he took it nice. He wasn't crying or anything. I mean, he was all right. Whatever. It would have been probably a shame for the bracelet event, though, if he would have won. It would have been kind of like, wow. But then again, he has a right to play, so, I mean, you know, if he wants to go, and he obviously has restricted animosity towards women or something, mommy issues, but let's not go into that here. That's for another show.
But you know what? Just minutes ago, Christy was talking about how you got to stand up to these guys and give it right back to them. You give her the microphone, she gives it right back to them.
Yeah, that was fun. The guy that actually said, you can intro them, and he goes, don't be too mean to the guy, so I thought it was like kind of like, you know, I didn't want to be too mean to him.
Christy, I mentioned earlier that you're now a successful options trader. You've been in that business for several years. I wonder what the years of playing poker did to prepare you for another kind of form of gambling, and that is trying to make money on Wall Street. Is there a correlation between the two?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think basically, like, for me, the best thing that I do as far as poker, because I'm not the greatest, I'm probably about maybe ranked about 10,350th in the world at the moment, but I think what it did do for me, why I am still in action, is the bankroll management system. And with what I do, it's very specific and it's kind of nitty, and I kind of use the same kind of guidelines just in the money management. So if I have a bad year or bad month, or, you know, I hold three-month positions a lot in trading, I downsize when doing bad and get my run bad out of the way and then move up when I'm doing well. So it's just a basic strategy, you know, formula to keep staying in action, because I've seen so many of my friends who have done so much better than me financially, made way more money than me, that are broke all the time. And it's like, well, because you didn't sell that house when you were doing bad, and you didn't, you know, you let yourself naked on these positions, or you gambled too much. And it's just with any business, when you're broke, you're a joke sort of thing. So got to stay in action.
So in other words, you can correlate that to the poker player that you know is a very, very good poker player, but always seems to be broke and borrowing money from people to get into tournaments.
Oh, yeah. Total bust out. Bad habits. Life habits, leaks, whatever they may be. But, you know, it's like also keeping money separate, bankroll separate. You keep your, you know, your action money, your poker money or whatever you're gambling on the side, and you keep your 6 months living expenses. I mean, I was taught that early in my gambling career, and it worked. It really does.
How about mixed games versus no limit hold'em in the main event? Which do you prefer? Do you like playing the seven card high low? Do you like playing a Raz or something like that? What are your favorite games?
My favorite games are definitely the eight or better games, Omaha and Set 8. Although this year, you know, I was playing the mix up until about 07. I was playing it a lot, and then I quit playing the high limit poker and just started to focus on options and part time tournament playing. But this year, about in January, I was starting to learn finally how to play online, and finally learning how to play no limit cash. So I started at 50 cents, $1.06 max, and then of course it was shut down. And now I'm playing small, just no limit, 1225, no limit, just because I think it's about time that I kind of learn how to play no limit. I'm a little behind the curve, but I have a great teacher. I have a great teacher. His name's John Kim. He's an online whiz. He has a site called StackemCoaching.com.
Yeah, they actually are the poker coaching sponsors of our show. And,
yeah.
John will be back on our show next week, and I didn't know that you were one of his students.
Oh yeah, I was John's first student before he even started Stack'em. He did a favor he's a good friend of a friend of ours, and I begged him to coach me. And he's just an online, he's like, what would JK do instead of what would JC do? He's the god of poker, like he's so good. And he's actually teaching me fundamentals of no limit hold'em, which I've never cared to study or learn. I sort of did it backwards. I got the opportunity to play big tournaments, so my first no limit experience was a 5K tournament, and now I'm learning how to play, learning the fundamentals backwards to cash game.
I'm not going to bother learning this game. How much to buy in? 5,000. I'm in. You realize, Christy, you were just talking about bankroll management 30 seconds ago.
No, I was sponsored. They came to me. They said, hey, do you want to be a full-time pro? I said, okay. You know, I was just a cash game player. If you're going to give me the money to play, I'm going to play. You know, I just
have
the opportunity So, I mean, I'm doing it backwards now. So I'm playing, like, small, no-limit cash games. I've been doing it for all this year, and I'm in the plus, and I've learned more from John Kim in the last 6 months than I've ever known about any form of poker, really. He's that good of a teacher.
Did that help you with your deep run in the main?
Oh, certainly. You know, I'm just implementing things that I just had no idea because, I fell asleep. I got out of the biz and played part-time from end of 06 to currently, and I used to be a couple online whizzes at the, 10K WPTs. And then I remember, I'll never forget, a couple years at the Bellagio, I'm sitting and I was so intimidated I didn't even know how to play with them. I'm like, I need to get a coach because I'm way behind the curve. These guys are too good. It's changed too much. And you got to throw the 3-bet and the 4-bet and all these goofy things they're doing now, which is, they changed the game completely. You know, Dennis, I'm sure. You've seen it change in the last few years alone. They're little whizzes. They're good.
They're very, very good. That's part of the problem. You used to be able to sit down at a table. You always had 3 or 4 or 5 people that you could pick on a little bit. Now you're lucky to find one or two.
Or they'll start picking on you, and you got to do their silly things back to them. And it's fun, and it's interesting. And for me, it's enlightened. It's awakened my interest again in poker because I was kind of getting burnt out on playing full time. I was looking to do something else. So I'm glad I'm trying to put hours in and playing small, and trying to learn no limit. Maybe by next year I can win the bracelet.
Christy, we were talking before about intimidation for women at the poker tables, and I actually was talking to a woman last night. This is not a woman-specific question, but I think it's kind of a rookie poker player question, and maybe you can share your insight, and Dennis can as well. So I was talking to this woman last night, and she has been playing some of the free online sites, PokerStars.net or maybe Zynga on Facebook or whatever the free online sites are. And, of course, the strategies there are different because you're not really risking anything other than your time. You don't have to manage any kind of bankroll when you're playing for free. But
yeah.
she's been doing this, and it's helped her learn the game. She had seen it on TV, and she's kind of late coming to this. She's not part of the moneymaker effect. She's just came to the game in the last year or so. But she still doesn't feel – so I was talking to her, and she was telling me about this, and I said, well, you should come over here to Harrah's St. Louis sometime, and, you could play 1-2, no limit, or buy into one of the $60 tournaments that they have here 10 times a week, and give it a try in a live setting. And she said, oh, no, I could never do that. And I said, why? She said, well, two reasons. One, I just don't think I'd be ready to sit down with those people who all know what they're doing. And two, she said, my face would be way too expressive every time I have a big hand. Even when I'm at home playing these free games online, if I have two aces in front of me, my husband can tell from across the room that I have a big hand, and I could never be able to hide that if I were playing in a live cash game. What advice would you give her? And I don't think she's alone in this. I think there are a lot of people who are playing these. Zynga has millions of people playing
millions
on Facebook every day. How do we get those people to get past their intimidation or their fear and come into the live cash game or even live tournament settings in local casinos?
Well, I mean, that could be a deep question, but basic strategy would be just to come in and practice before you come in. This sounds ridiculous, but it works. Practice in the mirror, like betting, you're betting, and bet the exact same way that every time, and look at this, pick a spot on the table, and every time you make an action, stare at that spot no matter what. Don't talk to anyone. Don't talk back to anyone. And just be a total robot, like I said, because that really does work. Or on the flip side of that, you could just be your own personality. So if it's loud and obnoxious or talkative, do that. Just do whatever is natural to you would be some advice. I mean, I think.
Okay. If I was giving somebody advice like that, you need to get comfortable at the table. I would probably go in there and I would play at the lowest possible limit I could. I don't care what it is, and go in there expecting to lose a few dollars, and go in there and just be a little mouse and sit back there and watch and try to be comfortable. Watch how they play it. So you remember to start putting, you know, to protect your card. So, you know, all of these little things. And watch everybody else and how they play and how they react. And, you know, I think you get comfortable. I think you start interacting. I think then that you can start, you know, falling into play, shall we say.
Because there are elements of how you play in a live setting that are very different than sitting in front of a computer screen.
Correct.
Even if it's a free poker game
online. First of all, you have to have clothes. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just say right now, you don't have to have a lot of them. But I mean, you know, when you're sitting there, the screen tells you how much is in the pot,
yeah,
how much another person has bet.
Yes.
And like you said, capping your cards and protecting yourself and how to stack your chips. And you know, online, your blinds might be put out for you automatically and all that sort of stuff and following what's going on. You know, if you play in a 1-2 no-limit game, you can sit back and not play a hand for almost an hour and lose $15, $10 or $15. She's afraid, of course, that she's going to come in and buy
right.
in for $60 or $70 or $80 or whatever it is and put that entire thing at risk, which, of course, it would be. Would you say to somebody like that, well, maybe you could sit down in the 3-6 limit game they have here? Or would that be too difficult, Christy, for somebody who's been playing these free no-limit games online?
Oh, I would say just forget about the $70 first off. Just say, I'm going to spend $70. Just think of it as a handbag or whatever you're going to buy yourself. Like, $70 is already gone, so take
that.
The money out of the equation, firstly. And then secondly, no, I wouldn't suggest limit, you know, 3-6, because that can be higher. I'd say maybe small limit, but the break is too high to beat the 1-2 limit probably. But sit in the smallest no-limit game, like Dennis says, and, you know, just grind and, you know, play tight and play your position. Play very ABC at first and, you know, watch the table, like you said. And, you know, just remember, they're just other mannequins. They're not even people. So, like, whatever they say to them, just like Teflon, let it bounce off you, because they're gonna mess with you. They always do. Like, so just expect that, you know,
and
have fun with it.
And I love the way you analyze that thing. It's just a handbag or whatever. Yeah, and it is. If you go in there and you can play for hours and hours and hours on $50, you really can. Because I don't care who you are, occasionally you are going to win a hand. You know, so just by default, if nothing else. So it's going to be a very cheap lessons. It's comfortable. It's so enjoyable. I have a lot of fun at the tables, and I think so many other people would too.
Mm-hmm.
Get in here, get over the intimidation factor, get comfortable at a table, and, you know, have fun.
I remember 10 years ago I brought a friend of mine into a poker room here in St. Louis, and he had played in some home games and, you know, the fun kind of thing where it was a quarter, 50 cents, a dollar, and he wanted to sit down and play, and he got some chips, and he was called for a table, and he walked over there, and he watched it for a while, and he came back to me and he said, I can't do it. I said, what are you talking about? He said, they're all so serious. When I'm playing in my home game, everybody's talking and making jokes and ordering drink and eating food, and everybody's having a great time because that's what we're all there for. Here, everybody is so freaking serious, I don't know that I can do that. That is something you do have to get past, and if you end up at the wrong table, you can end up with that. But on the other part of it is, you know, for the woman who was worried about giving off tells, you could sit there, not play a hand, and study the other people and work on reading them.
There you go.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, like, people, they're just people, you know, or just mannequins. They're just people. Just talk to them. When people are rude to me, I'm even nicer to them. I do the opposite, because eventually you can crack them. It's funny, because some of these online kids, they're really rude. They don't want to say hi to you, and I just start talking to them. I used to be intimidated by them. Don't let them intimidate you. There's people, just start talking to them, like, hey, blah, whatever. Give them a compliment, whatever. Just open them up. And then that way you'll be more comfortable with your neighbors, especially the people to your right and left. Talk to your neighbors. You know, even if you talk to one other person while you're playing, you'll feel comfortable. You know, I'm very friendly to my neighbors. So is Dennis. He's very friendly to his neighbors. That's a good thing. It's good vibe around you when you're playing. You want to have fun. If they're not having fun, I'm still going to have fun. You can bet your bottom dollar, because I've been miserable many times at the table. And it's like, no, I want to have fun, you know?
You know why you were miserable? Because you bet your bottom dollar.
always.
Oh, I love it. Christy, excellent time on the radio. Thank you so much for coming. This has been awesome. I love it.
Thank you, guys. Right. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. Right. And congratulations again. Christy Gazes, the newest inductee into the Women in Poker Hall of Fame, joining us again here on the final table. Speaking of women in poker, the WSOP circuit event down in Bossier City, Louisiana, has been nice to the ladies so far, particularly to one woman by the name of Felicia Jonico. You may not remember her, but last year she won her first WSOPC ring at an event here at the circuit event at Harrah's St. Louis. This week, she picked up her second one in the kind of event that Christy would love, the $345 horse event down there. Felicia is now only the fourth woman in the eight-year history of the circuit events to have multiple gold rings, so congratulations to her. And also, she finished fourth in a no-limit hold'em event this past week.
Cool.
So congratulations to her. That's all the time we have for today. Next week, we'll be back here at Harrah's St. Louis with Vince Van Patten. By the way, remind me, I have to take him to task because he's the man singularly responsible for people overplaying ace-king. For 10 years, he's been going all excited about Big Slick. He's got Big Slick. And you know how much trouble you and I have gotten into with ace-king, you more than I. We'll talk about that when Vince Van Patten from the World Poker Tour joins us next week. Here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis and StackhamCoaching.com. Use the promo code FINALTABLE for a free trial. And by Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 1-800-GRANNY-8. For Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. You can get our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.